All right, we'll call to order the Stevensville Town Council meeting, February 13th, 2020. Ms. Hoffman, can you call roll, please?
Mayor Dewey.
Here.
Councilmember Holcomb.
Here.
Councilmember Devlin.
Here.
Councilmember Vick.
Here.
And Councilmember Michelson.
Here.
Great. All right, let's please join me in the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
All right, tonight you have three sets of minutes before you for approval. January 23rd's public hearing, January 23rd's council meeting, and the 30th of January's committee of the full meeting. Mr. Michelson.
I make a motion to approve the minutes of January 23rd public hearing, the January 3rd town council meeting, and the January 30th committee of the whole meeting.
Is there a second?
Second.
Okay, it's been moved by Mr. Michelson, seconded by Mr. Vick to approve minutes from January 23rd public hearing, January 23rd council meeting, and January 30th committee of the whole meeting. Council discussion. Ms. Holcomb.
On the minutes for Thursday, January 23rd's council meeting, I believe in the new business where we were talking about the utility billing policies, I believe that council member Michelson made the motion to modify the billing period from 15 to 30 days. And I believe I then met, or I'm trying to, I'm the one that made the motion to take it, the late charge from 10% to 5%, and then the amendment was seconded by Councilmember Vick.
Okay, we'll clarify that in the record. Mr. Michelson.
I'd like to add on the minutes for Thursday, January 23rd council meeting under new business. Item B, discussion council meeting attendance by city attorney. I think we need to add where Councilmember Vick, I, and Councilmember Holcomb all were in discussion that we didn't think we needed the attorney there at the meetings.
Okay. Any further discussion on minutes? Public comment? Hearing none, I'll call for the vote. Councilmember Michelson.
Aye.
Councilmember Devlin.
Aye.
Councilmember Holcomb.
Aye.
Councilmember Vick.
Aye.
Next up is approval of the biweekly claims, numbers 15681 through 15782. Ms. Holcomb?
I move that we approve of the biweekly claims of 15681 through 15782.
Is there a second?
I second.
Okay, it's been moved by Ms. Holcomb, seconded by Ms. Devlin, to approve the biweekly claims 15681 through 15782. Council discussion on the claims.
I need to segregate myself out of a couple of these claims just simply because of fire department involvement. That's going to be 15741 and only the fire department supplies. 15751, 15756, and 15764 for the fire department phone and internet. 15768 for fuel for the fire department.
So
pretty much the ones that are nothing but the fire department.
Just to clarify conflict of interest in voting on those claims, you don't personally benefit from us paying the phone bill on the fire department.
No.
Okay. So there's no need for you necessarily to abstain from those claims.
Okay.
Now, for example, if the reimbursement claim were forward, that would be something we'd probably ask you to recuse yourself, but typical bills for the fire department aren't a conflict for you.
Okay.
Further discussion on claims? Any questions? Ms. Holcomb.
On the first page, 15741 under the Visa, this $1,906.74 for BD office supplies.
Those are new code books for the updated codes. And they're rather pricey, as you've noticed.
And then on page 3 of 9, 15760, $29.50 for the Berry Sales Corporation.
Okay, those are the stand-up conversion desks, so they're sit-stand desks for the staff.
So were they in our capital improvements?
They were not, because individually they don't exceed the $5,000. Well, even the claim itself doesn't exceed $5,000, but individually they're not a capitalized item. They were included in the office supplies budget for 2020 for the respective departments that bought them.
And
Ms. Holcomb?
I know that they're costly, so I know to get mine where I work, I had to give a doctor's reason why I needed one. I mean, shouldn't we have done something like that instead of spending over almost $3,000?
This was more of a proactive approach rather than a reactive approach to any workers' compensation claims or ergonomic complaints, where staff requested in the budget if it was possible to purchase those desks, and that was something that made it through the process. And they're split out amongst the respective funds to do so. So water, sewer, and general fund, depending on who the employee worked for.
I think I have one more.
Okay.
Page 4 of 9, claim 15772, Snow Mountain Electric, for $2,664.
I believe that was a pump for the wastewater treatment plant.
Okay.
That needed to be rebuilt.
Variable speed drive unit.
Okay.
I saw that one too, Robin, and I went, whoa.
Okay.
This is it.
Mr. Michelson.
I'm going to go back to the Berry desk.
Sure.
Here.
Okay.
The total amount was $2,929.50. I'm looking at, I think we discussed this earlier today in our office, Brandon, about our purchasing policy.
Correct.
It falls under the, we have to have minimum of 2 written quotes, and I know we don't have to ask for that all the time, but I think it's a time that maybe, and this goes back 4 or 5 years now, even before you were mayor, there's been kind of a culture in this town where certain departments go and they buy big ticket items, and then they come to the council after the fact and ask for approval, and it kind of hamstrings the council, and well, we have to pretty much pay for it, whether we want to or not. I'm wondering if maybe there was some guidelines or some stricter measures to where, and I understand some places you have to buy, emergencies and whatnot, but where does it draw a line where, how do I say, department heads wouldn't be able to or shouldn't be able to go and buy big ticket items until they bring it before the council first?
So that line is typically drawn in your budget, where council exercises its authority over the expenditure control at the fund level, not necessarily at the object level, where that's more or less the executive branch's responsibility. So as we work through the budget process and you notice those figures or those items that are listed that are larger ticket items as you put them, that's your opportunity to do so. When the claim comes forward, to be clear, the claims process at a council meeting is not necessarily seeking approval. What we're asking you to do is to verify that the claim is accurate and to authorize a check to be made. The claim process isn't a process where we say, is it okay if we buy this? Because it's already been done. And that's how it's delineated in state law. Okay. So the approval process is outlined in the purchasing policy, right? Where if there's a non-budgeted item or it hits a certain dollar amount, those material expenditures are addressed by council when those thresholds are hit. And that's the policy council's adopted and put forth in the organization for us to operate under. So if a different policy is necessary, then the purchasing policy should be amended within reason. But otherwise, the administration makes purchases and even appropriations based on council's direction through policy, which is either the budget or the purchasing policy. Ms. Holcomb.
I was on council before that was put in place, and I was on council when that was put in place. Before that was put in place, every penny had to come to council to be approved before it could be spent. And I mean, I don't think we need to go that extreme, but we really need to really look at this purchasing policy because it is, I think, out of control.
I would argue, I don't know how you can argue that spending is out of control when consistently, especially in the general fund, we come in under budget. I mean, we had a $40,000 surplus in the general fund budget last year. So I don't know how spending went out of control. If anything, we underspent significantly. And those material expenditures, and when I say material, those significant expenditures, such as the backhoe, whether that was budgeted for or not, something like that comes before council. Because it's a material expenditure, it's almost $60,000. In this case, we're talking collectively for six desks, we're talking $3,000, which spread across the funds is, in terms of our $3 million budget, an immaterial amount. I realize spending isn't to be taken lightly, but this isn't an amount of money that is necessarily egregious in terms of our purchasing policy. So, and I think to your question, and we discussed this earlier, and we verified with Robert, unfortunately he's not able to join us this evening due to illness, but he does have that documentation available for the research into what things cost. And in the case of the desks, we researched that, and he has that documentation. If you'd like to review it, you can just come in.
Do you think, Robin, that we should maybe have a council meeting to discuss this so we can make changes? Or
I think so. Because I know I also, when with the Snow Mountain Electric, I even found that we should not have contracts over 5 years. We should be reviewing contracts within that 5 years. We shouldn't have that, you know, because someone might be doing it cheaper. Someone might not be doing it cheaper. We need to start following these codes.
So you mentioned Snow Mountain Electric and a contract. We don't have a contract with Snow Mountain Electric.
That claim
for the sewer plant was actually through Mountain Equipment Technology. But for example, like with Snow Mountain Electric, we'll use them as an example. We don't have a contract because each project is different. And so he does primarily the electrical work for the town because he has knowledge of the town's system. And the purchasing policy allows for sole source procurement when a contractor has more knowledge than the next person on a particular system that the town is operating under. In terms of our water and wastewater systems, that's not something we're willing to just turn an amateur loose on that doesn't have the knowledge of our systems. We find it more efficient and more effective just to use the same company to constantly service that equipment. But I mean, the council's certainly welcome to pull together a CAL meeting to discuss the purchasing policy. I believe a CAL meeting has been held in either last year to 18 months on the purchasing policy, and very little feedback was offered at that time for what the purchasing policy should change in the purchasing policy. It was discussed and some procedures were discussed and clarified, but no changes were put forward at that time. But at any rate, the claims are before you tonight. For approval as to their accuracy. Mr. Michelson?
Speaking of the claims, and nothing against Scott here, I talked to him earlier today, and in our discussion it was discussed that, correct me if I'm wrong, Scott, I asked you when you were coming tonight, and you said, Manager, we wanted you here, and I said, well, I thought we had discussed that we need you at every meeting. And you said, well, we didn't make a decision, we just discussed it. Am I correct?
That's correct, Mr. Michelson. I believe what we were talking about is there was a discussion held during the last council meeting no decision was made. What I heard from the meeting was that the town didn't want to spend extra money for me to come out here. We talked about some alternatives, but no clear guidance was given as to what exactly was going to happen. Okay. So at this point, from my understanding, the request from the mayor's office was to come until there's clear guidance as to what's going on, okay, moving forward. Like I said, that's a decision for you guys. I think you and the mayor's office need to get together on that and let me know what you want to do moving forward. I know we've talked about some alternatives, but I need to know what you want to do.
Because I see it's way over budget, as you well know. And we can either make a decision now, Brandon, or we can put an agenda item and discuss it. But I thought we were in clear consensus before when Brandon, Dempsey and I and Robin discussed that we didn't think he needed to be here at every meeting.
And I hear that. I don't think it's appropriate under the biweekly claims to make that decision.
Exactly.
So it's something you should consider on a later agenda.
Okay, you can do that.
Ms. Holcomb.
I just have one other question. I mean, I haven't, in the last couple meetings in the claims, I haven't seen, so I'm going to ask, because it was a motion that was made last year, if you had paid the town back for the fireworks.
I have not, and that's not something you'd see in the claims. That'd be a reimbursement wouldn't come before you. That's money coming in, not money going out. Correct. And I have not.
Okay.
Any more questions on claims? Mr. Michelson.
I'm looking at the phone bills again. Is there any way that we can get that one down, or do we have to wait until the contract?
We're looking at the contracts. Robert continues to work on that with Verizon.
Okay.
Some of those devices are on contract, so right, we're waiting for those to run out. Okay. Any other questions on claims from council? Public comments? All right, hearing none, I'll call for the vote. Councilmember Devlin.
Aye.
Councilmember Holcomb.
Aye.
Councilmember Vick.
Aye.
And Councilmember Michelson.
Aye.
All right, claims are passed. Administrative reports. Ms. Coleman Assad, the airport report.
Good evening, Council. This is my first one, so bear with me a little bit. So general activity for the airport. Thursday, January 16th, a group of individuals from Stevensville Aviation Community traveled to Helena, Montana to lobby Montana Aeronautics for funding for our airport. The group included Craig Thomas, Don Whitehair, Dempsey Vick, Tyler Reed from More Summarily, Robert Underwood, and myself. It was a very successful day for our airport. The Stevensville Airport received $209,187 from Montana Aeronautics for the upcoming construction project starting this spring. The project is supposed to last approximately 90 days. This includes rehabilitating the apron, rehabilitating the taxiway, adding an intermediate taxiway, and constructing an administration building. The airport also received an option to take a loan with Montana Aeronautics in the amount of $21,600 for rehabilitating the service road, and that would be a 2021 project. I want to thank everyone for attending. We had the largest representation of all the airports in Montana there. There's also a new proposed drain field for the airport. Bob Wolfenden is the owner of a property adjacent to the airport. Currently, Specified Fittings is leasing that property from Mr. Wolfenden. At present, the property has a drain field that can accommodate approximately 25 people, and they have about 85 employees at this time. Mr. Wolfenden is looking for a permanent solution to this problem. He approached the airport as a possible solution. The airport is in discussions with him. We have identified a possible area that would be appropriate for the airport and for Mr. Wolfenden and Specified Fittings. And we are looking to have a full proposal to the council in the upcoming months. Any questions?
Congratulations.
Thank you.
It's exciting.
I'm going to ask Craig if he has anything he would like to add. I also wanted to thank the administration, since this is my first month here. Everybody has been extremely supportive and helpful to me. And I would also like to express my thanks to Craig Thomas, who's also been extremely useful to me. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Any questions from council? Okay. To clarify that drain field that's been proposed, some of the council's already aware. For those who aren't aware, that is something that would be serviced by the airport as well. So drain field wouldn't solely service specified fittings, but will also help hangars at the airport. So we're encouraged by that development. Judge O'Connor has included her annual court report for the council's review in the packet. If you have questions on that, I encourage you just to reach out to her. She's usually in the office on Tuesday mornings and throughout the day on Wednesday during court hours. So if you have questions, shoot her an email, give her a call, or stop in. The building department does not have a report in your packet, and there's not one available at the council meeting. Given their part-time status, they've had somewhat of a challenge pulling that together as they're covering some other tasks as well, so we'll pull something together for you folks at the next administrative report session. Robert's included in his finance report the statement of expenditures for budget versus actual for each fund for you. I think that he probably had more of a finance report prepared for you, and I'll ask him when he returns to the office to perhaps email that out to the council so that you have that information. I'm not sure what it is exactly he was willing to share. Mr. Michelson.
As far as these budget versus actuals, mm-hmm. down there on 5002, fire engine capital improvement, is that a typo, I hope?
4002. So it says fire engine capital improvement. That was the initial intent of that fund, was that there was some CD funding set aside for capital improvements within the fire department. And so that fund had $25,000 of appropriation, which was used towards the SCBA grant match. So
it was for bottles and not fire engine?
Not for fire, it was not, correct. The expenditure was not used for fire engines. Council directed it to be used towards the match for the SCBAs.
Okay.
Yeah. Fire department report, while we're on the topic, Chief Motley.
Okay, so for January, we had 44 requests of service, evenly split between the town and the district, 22 each. We had zero mutual aid requests. We had 36 medical responses, 7 fires, and 1 motor vehicle crash. So we are year to date, 44, as of last month. Of course, we're in 67 or 8 today, was our run number on the date. So it's on par for about where we are average. You know, we have generally average in a month is somewhere in that 40 to 50 kind of range. So it's about average for requests for service. Going on in the department, we're continuing to work on getting our extractor installed. We've got clearance, I guess we're pretty well through the final hurdle on clearance through the building department to get that all done and get that in place. I'm waiting for a contractor to get back with us what his cost is going to be so we can get that done and get that finished, put together. We did have a meeting yesterday with the ISO, kind of reviewed our ISO rating and where we may need to do some things coming forward that might help that ISO rating. Currently we are at a 4 ISO rating. We would have to gain 10 points to move it to a 3 or to lower it to a 3. 10 points is a big movement to move for a science department that we are. There are a few things that we can work on, compile and get together. I don't know that we'll make it to a 3, but strengthen our position as a 4 at least. So that was a benefit to joining in that meeting and go through that. We continue to train with all of our mutual aid partners once a month on structure protection and structure fire drills, which has proven to be very beneficial for all the departments up and down the valley. I mean, we all rely on each other heavily to provide the services that we do. So we've done that. We did have our annual banquet at the end of last month over at the Victor Steakhouse, which was well attended and was a nice evening. Our annual event that we do do, so I appreciate those that were able to make it. We do invite all our neighbors to come to that event and share with us in our successes and things that we've done over the years. So other than that, it's pretty much business as usual. We do have a new returning fire member. We have an individual who went through our Firefighter One program, passed it with flying colors a number of years ago, and then had to move out of the area for employment and has since moved back and is now requested rejoining the department. So I'll bring his name forward and get him approved through the council and then also get him set up with our workers' comp. So Karen Gavlak is that individual. So it'll be a great addition back into the department. So we really appreciate that. So it's pretty much where we are, doing the same old, getting ready to take down Christmas lights. You know, it's not July, but we like to do things a little bit at a time. So anyway, any questions?
This is for Chief.
I just want to say thank you for the dinner. It was very nice.
You're welcome. Thank you for coming.
Any questions for the Chief? Okay. Thank you.
Thanks.
Police department report is included in your packet. I'll allow you to review that yourself. If you have questions, reach out to the Chief. Unfortunately, he and his clerk are not able to attend tonight. Also, some illness going through there as well. Public Works, though, is here. George.
So I didn't get a chance to get stuff into your guys' packet, but I want to let you know Jeff Hales, last day will be this next week, Friday. He will be going to work for the city of Missoula in their water department. Good step up for him. Loss for us, because he's a very good employee. Our water system, we treated 12,860,000 gallons of water last month. There was a leak at the Mission Street trailer park over here. It was losing 30,000 gallons per day. We were tracking it and it took almost a month before it was found. The reason why is it wouldn't surface and it was in PVC pipe, so you can't hear it. So that's been fixed, so that helped our water system. We got a new computer system for the well house that runs the whole system, the pumps and all that stuff. It needed to be upgraded because it was already at its life expectancy, and that was in our budget system to replace that. It's been brought up to the new Windows 10, and all the software was in with it. We had a water problem at 509 Mission Street. I was called out because they had a plumbing problem. They couldn't shut the water off. And when I got there, I couldn't shut the water off because the curb valve had been filled with rocks. So I was able to freeze the water line in the house and they got it fixed. And the next day we vacuumed out that curb valve. And we also vacuumed out one at 208 College with the same basic problems. Sewer system, we treated 5 million gallons. We had the floats for the clarifier system replaced. They were 20 years old and they were starting to not work anymore. We had to constantly go shut pumps off because they would just run when there was no water in the bay. So those are fixed. The VFD that was replaced had gone bad. They sent it back to the factory. They reconditioned it and then sent it back in Snow Mountain, installed it. Our computer system that when they programmed all that, they had to come in and do some programming on it. You haven't seen that bill yet. But one of the reasons why I use Snow Mountain is he knows that kind of equipment. A lot of electricians don't know automation stuff, and he does. And he'll come down right away because he knows we need it as soon as possible. We had a sewer backup on College Street, which at 420 College, water got into the basement, and it was partly our problem because we had the backup. It was also partly their problem because they supposedly have a check valve in that system that was taken out. So then that allowed wastewater to get into their sewer septic water, get into the basement. We got the main jetted and got it cleared, and things have been good for there. We've been servicing the equipment down at the sewer plant, the gearboxes for the clarifiers and some of the other gearboxes for other equipment. We started up our sludge press this month, and it's been running very well at this point in time after we rebuilt the pump for that. And I want to thank you for letting us get the new skid steer in the backhoe. That was very important to us. The old backhoe was giving us lots of troubles and costing quite a bit of money. We had one grave at Riverside. I dug the perk holes for the airport, and that was the first day we got the backhoe. So that was a good test. And we had to take down the great big cottonwood tree in Lisa Clark Park. And after we got it down, if you look at the well house sits sideways now. And that's because the tree was about that far away from the well house, so it was lifting that well house, and it was going to cause more problems for longer to stay. If you see a tree gone, that's really cool. That's all I got.
Any questions for us?
Yes.
The 420 College Street. He's been in contact with me several times. Is that going to be a claim that we are responsible for, or that he will, or is it going to be split? Do you know?
I don't know about that. I know our insurance company is working on it.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. All right. Thanks, George. All right. There aren't any guests to recognize tonight. Except a crowd of regulars. Thanks for being here. Or correspondence. We will have some correspondence for you at the next agenda, though we've received some stuff last month. Public comment. Opportunity to comment on anything under the town in the Stevensville jurisdiction. Please step to the podium, state your name and address for the record. Any public comment tonight? All right. Move right into unfinished business then. Discussion decision on Resolution 387C, a resolution amending the town council rules. Town Council considered and discussed and made modifications to the council rules at a Committee of the Whole meeting. It was January 30th, Committee of the Whole meeting. Those changes have been incorporated into the council rules, as well as the grammatical and spelling, et cetera, formatting errors that were noted that evening as well. There's been some things we've discovered since that COW meeting as well. The only change that's taken place since your COW meeting that is included in this packet that we failed to bring forward to you at the January 30th meeting was a switch from Robert's rules to Rosenberg's rules. And I think if you had a chance to review the Rosenberg rules attachment publication to the council rules that was in your packet, you can tell that it's a condensed version of a parliamentary procedure, and it more closely follows how we operate on a regular basis in these meetings. Whereas it's difficult for the person who's chairing a meeting, certainly, you know, I become more used to it as I do it a couple times a month, but if someone were to fill into my shoes on a irregular basis, like the council president, it's difficult to memorize the 600-page black book of Robert's Rules. And sometimes that becomes a hindrance for us, whereas Rosenberg's rules are a bit easier for the layperson to understand, a bit more consistent to follow for how we actually do things. And certainly nothing in those rules supersedes what happens in terms of what you put in your rule, in your council rules, and what state law governs. So. I put that forward as a suggestion in hopes that you would consider that and perhaps adopt it. If it's council's prerogative rather than stay with Robert's rules, we'll obviously comply with that, but I thought I'd at least bring the idea forward for you tonight. Otherwise, council rules are exactly as you left them on January 30th with your suggestions. Mr. Michelson.
I make a motion to approve Resolution 387C, a resolution amending the town council rules.
Is there a second?
Second.
Okay, it's been moved by Mr. Michelson, seconded by Mr. Vick, to approve Resolution 387C, a resolution amending town council rules. Discussion. Ms. Holcomb.
The part of the agenda, I thought we had suggest that instead of in a timely manner, it should be 30 days. Or it to be reviewed by the town's attorney?
You are correct. I apologize. We moved the bullet point up and failed to change the days. We can easily accommodate that. Mr. Michelson?
We discussed this earlier today, Brandon, but if you could, if there's some questions from the public as far as combining the agenda items, basically.
Sure. Do you want me to elaborate basically how I explained it to you? Sure. So a consent agenda, for those who don't know, is an opportunity for a group of items to be considered by the council in a single action. So the intent here would be that you would consider the minutes and claims as a single action. So a single motion would approve the consent agenda. So we'd come to the consent agenda, and that agenda would include the minutes, the claims, for example, and then you would move to approve the consent agenda. There'd be a second, you can discuss it and move on. And so it expedites that process. Other things that can be included on the consent agenda are things like, perhaps we all know, based on communication through the four or five of us, that we want to hold a committee of the whole meeting on the 30th of October. We can put that as a consent agenda item, scheduling a committee of the whole meeting for the 30th of October, and it's done once you approve the consent agenda, rather than going through the process of a motion and a second to schedule a simple meeting. Another place we've seen it used is if you, for example, the council rules would be a good use, where perhaps you've discuss council rules at great length through several COW meetings or through several different meetings. And at that end of that last meeting, after you've discussed it, you could make a motion to say, I move that this be placed on the next consent agenda. And because you've discussed it at length, you're ready to adopt it, we'll place it on the consent agenda, and when you approve the consent agenda, that series of items is all done with one motion, rather than going through each agenda item and lengthening the meeting. So it's a tool to expedite the meeting for administrative acts. And primarily our intent was just to use it for minutes and claims and any other administrative functions that and one example I gave Mr. Michelson today was airport leases. How often does an airport lease come up before council where you guys discuss it for more than a half hour? Not very often. Or sometimes we bring three or four leases before you and we have to go through those three or four leases individually. A consent agenda will allow you to do all four of those at one time if you chose to. There's nothing precluding council from also separating something from the consent agenda. So if there's something specifically you want to address, say it's the claims, then you can move to remove the claims from the consent agenda and discuss that item separately, or consider that item separately versus doing it all with one act. So that's the theory behind consent agendas. And we've seen a number of municipalities use and practice the use of them across the state and even the nation, and we thought, well, it's worth a try here. So, questions on that or anything else in the rules? Mr. Michelson.
The implementation, as Mr. Vick stated earlier, where the 30-day rule is as far as if you want the attorney to look at that, to hold back an agenda item?
Right.
Okay. I think Robin said that we could fix that at the COW meeting. Was it two council members sign that overrules that?
Right, and so we moved the sentence up into the list.
Okay, so two council member signatures would overrule the 30-day.
That's the intent.
Okay. Because usually when we did this in the past, if it's something that needed the town attorney to discuss, we either tabled it, correct, Robin, or... And then right. He would review it anyway, and it would come back, correct? And I don't have a problem with any of these, except I don't think we need to change our rules to California.
And that's not the intent. To,
I know that.
The publication comes from the California League of Cities, but it's used all over. It's not just California's way of doing things. So that's not, my intent is not to shove something that California does onto the town council, but it is a case of another organization has done the work to put the publication together.
It was a stab against California.
Well, that's not very much.
You tell them happy cows live in California. You get real California milk there.
The other addition to your agenda, just to clarify, is public hearings, where that aids us in holding a public hearing during a council meeting rather than convening at 6:30, having a 2-minute, 40-second hearing, and then dawdling for the next 28 minutes. We'd rather just get it done during a council meeting. And oftentimes those public hearings could be scheduled at the later council meeting in the months where you're not doing administrative reports, so there's time to allow for that.
I would think we should just keep the Robert's rules. That's my vote.
Okay. Ms. Holcomb.
The only two things that I would like to see not in here, well, of course, is this. I would like to stay with the Robert rules of order. And with the consent agenda, I would really like to just go through each item line by line, and that way we can get a vote on them instead of having it all bundled together.
Any council discussion?
I mean, I've been going through this whole, I'm loud tonight. I've been going through this whole Rosenberg's versus Robert's rules and whatnot a lot lately. And I mean, yeah, this is a very simplified thing, and Robert's rules does have a lot of context in the book. But I mean, the way our stuff's written, the way our laws are written and whatnot here, I mean, any one of our rules, Rosenberg's isn't going to override that. So if we can do our own modified version of rules of order where we can adopt this now and then work on something that where we add to it and do our own thing. I'm definitely not fully advocating for Rosenberg's. I'm just saying it's a stepping stone. We use this as a clean plate, and then we build up from it rather than having a 600-page book that I have only read the chapter 3 in. So,
picture this, Bob. Michelson's Rules of Order.
Stop it.
Sounds catchy, doesn't it?
Which means there is no order.
But Mr. Vick brings up a good point that you could choose to use Rosenberg's tonight, you could choose to use Roberts tonight, or you could choose one or the other, or you could and then move forward on creating a modified version that fits Stevensville's needs. That's not something that the administration obviously undertook. We just found something else, but certainly if the council wants to convene and develop those rules, we'd accommodate that process.
So I guess why you did this forever, probably 90 years for Robert's rules. So what is the advantage moving into Rosenberg?
It's more consistent with how we actually work. And I guess, you know, if someone really wanted to, they could hold our feet to the fire that we're not following Robert's rules, where we said we would follow Robert's rules.
Say we're going to follow this, we don't even know what it is.
Rosenberg? Well, we do. We basically do follow Rosenberg's. That's more accurate as to how we operate versus at a meeting versus Robert's rules.
And one example, something that we do a lot is that where we'll ask to segregate out items and agendas and things like that. Robert's rules actually does not allow that. It would actually be whoever. There's no segregation. It would be and a full abstain from a vote, while Rosenberg's allows for substitute motions and segregation motions.
The other advantage that we saw when we brought Rosenberg's rules forward was in the process of onboarding council members over the past couple of years, I've at least noticed an emphasis placed by the candidate or the incoming council member that there's some anxiety about understanding how a meeting is run and understanding Robert's Rules of Order, and I've oftentimes lent the book to incoming council members so that they can kind of get a grasp of Robert's rules, and I to some degree feel sorry for those people because they have, you know, there's anxiety around that. They try to study that very thick book, and frankly, I've only used it as a reference. I've never actually read it. when a case comes up where a strange motion comes forward, then I'll reference it. But otherwise, I don't use that book because it's so cumbersome. So I think, you know, from an incoming council member's perspective, this may be more beneficial and easier to understand coming in and alleviate some of that anxiety. And maybe, I don't know, maybe the new council members on board can speak to that or not. But
I think we should.
Mr. Michelson?
I would like to keep Robert's rules and then maybe Dempsey and I can get together and we can go through this at a more, like you were saying.
Yeah.
We can go through it and adapt it further and then bring it forward. That's my opinion.
Yeah, that's fine. And I'd much rather do that with the entire council. Like, so mm-hmm. like you were asking for a Cal meeting on the purchasing policy, we can do a Cal meeting where we all build our own rules of order.
Okay. That sound good right now?
Sure. I just need that in the form of a motion.
Now, what does she have to rescind her motion?
Gosh, if only we had Rosenberg's rules of order.
I know.
You can amend her motion.
Okay.
He made the motion. Excuse me. Mr. Michelson made the motion. So, if he wants to amend it or rescind it and start clean with a fresh motion, which is probably preferred.
I'll rescind my motion.
Okay.
I'll make a motion to go ahead and adopt the council rules as written, segregating out sections 2 and 3 and keeping those as Robert's rules of order until we have a further meeting to discuss this together.
Is there a second?
Second.
Okay, it's been moved by Mr. Vick, second by Mr. Michelson to approve resolution 387C, the council rules as they're written, with the exception of the Robert's rules of order language. Further council discussion? Public comment. Ms. Barker. Step to the podium, please.
The one thing that I have kind of a problem on with you guys trying to condense everything, like Robin said, you know, going line item for line item, there might be some things that the public has questions on, and when you're compiling it all together, it's not going to give them the opportunity to be able to comment.
To address that, the public would still have an opportunity to comment on the consent agenda. So if there's any item on the consent agenda, before the action is taken, public comment is still taken on that.
To follow up on Stacy's comment, yes, the public could comment and during public comment. However, that doesn't give a chance for the council members to interact with the public on that topic, because public comment is a chance for just that. Comment, no dialogue. Whereas comment on an item on the table for discussion involves and can involve dialogue. So there's a big difference there on a consent agenda item versus a item up for discussion.
Correct. And right, and no item of significant public interest or something that we perceive would take significant public comment would be placed on a consent agenda.
But again, that would be your perception as to what is significant.
And if council felt that there was a large showing of public for a certain item, they can, like I said, they can segregate that out if they chose to. Ms. Holcomb.
I still would like to see that just not be added.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Is there a motion to do so? Can't just strike it unless there's a motion.
Well, I'll just go ahead and amend mine. I'll add in the removal of the consent agenda thing.
Okay. So the amendment states the removal. So the amended motion is to remove the consent agenda from the agenda and replace it with minutes and claims. Is there a second on the amendment?
I second.
Okay. Discussion on the amendment. Public comment on the amendment. Call for the vote on the amendment. Councilmember Holcomb.
Aye.
Councilmember Devlin.
Aye.
Councilmember Michelson.
Aye.
Councilmember Vick.
Aye.
Okay. Amendment passes. The motion on the table is to approve council rules as they're written, removing Robert's Rules of Order and no consent agenda. Excuse me, removing Rosenberg's Rules of Order, retaining Robert's Rules of Order, correct?
Correct.
Okay, just to clear on that. Any further council discussion? Any further public comment? All right, hearing none, call for the vote. Councilmember Devlin.
Aye.
Councilmember Vick.
Aye.
Councilmember Holcomb.
Aye.
Councilmember Michelson.
Aye.
All right, motion passes. We'll make those modifications and we'll get that published. All right, next item is unfinished item B, discussion decision on resolution 457A, amending utility billing policies and procedures. It was requested at the most previous council meeting that some changes be made to the utility billing policies and procedures. Namely, those changes were lengthening the billing cycle to 30 days and changing the penalty for a late payment from 10% to 5%. In doing so, we went ahead and modified everything, stuck it in the packet, and then we realized in comparing this to our municipal code, that the direction of the council conflicts with what the municipal code says in terms of water and sewer billing. Municipal code retains the 15-day period for a payment due. The payment is due in 15 days and delinquent in 30, which was consistent with what we had. So you have two options. One option, you can simply change from 10% to 5% on the penalty, because that's not fixed in ordinance, but the penalty is authorized in ordinance, so you can change the penalty from 10 to 5% and take no action on the billing periods or the due dates. Or you can adopt the resolution as it stands today and undertake the process of modifying the ordinance, which will require first reading of the ordinance, two public notices in the paper, a public hearing, and then second reading. And it should be clarified, the billing cycle is always 30 days. We always, you know, we bill on a monthly basis. So the billing cycle wasn't necessarily 15 days before. It was just your bill was due 15 days from the date you received it. Mr. Michelson.
I make a motion to approve resolution 457A, amending utility billing policies and procedures.
Is there a second?
Second.
It's been moved by Mr. Michelson, seconded by Mr. Vick, to approve resolution 457A, amending utility billing policies and procedures. Council discussion? Mr. Michelson.
I know it's more work for the administration, but I think to make it fair, I think we should use your second option, Mayor Dewey,
okay,
as far as putting it on the 30-day.
Okay.
And of course you'll have to go into the ordinances and everything to change all that, correct?
Yes. Yeah, we'll bring an ordinance forward that amends the original ordinance. And so just so I'm clear, because I understand how the ordinance reads, currently that your bill is due in 15 days and becomes delinquent in 30 days. Is it your intent to say that your bill is due in 30 days and becomes delinquent in 30 days? Or do you want to discuss that when the ordinance comes up? I guess I just need to know how to word the ordinance when we write it.
Was there a problem with that way?
Not at all.
I'm good with that. Then.
Okay. So you have 30 days to pay your bill and it's delinquent on the 31st day. Ms. Devlin.
Is there a cost involved if we give public notice and go through all of those steps?
Yes, there is.
What would that be?
There's a publication twice in the newspaper. I don't recall off the top of my head what a general legal notice costs us in the newspaper. We do plenty of them. It should be an easy number, but the entire process is likely going to cost us less than $150. And I can get more specifics as legal notices, on legal notices, what legal notices cost, but we run enough of them that it's two weeks in the paper, and then fortunately we can, because you've adopted a new council rules, you can hold that public hearing during a council meeting, so there's not a whole lot of time being spent, but the material costs are going to be the legal notices. Mr. Michelson.
So according to this, water sewer bills are paid due 30 days prior to the billing date. After 30 days, unpaid water sewer will become delinquent at a 5% penalty and may add it. So this language would be added into the rest of the ordinance?
The ordinance wouldn't stipulate the 5%.
Okay.
It would stipulate the day period, the time period, because it currently does.
Yeah.
Okay.
Ms. Holcomb?
So if I'm reading this right, even if we kept it at the 15-day and you became delinquent at 30 days, they would not get the 5% penalty until they became delinquent.
Correct.
I think
that's what our intent was when we first came up with this resolution, honestly, because we were thinking that people were going to start getting charged at 5 or 10% right there at day 16 rather than day 31.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking too. So
that's the language you probably want to change. If that's your intent, that's easy language to change in the resolution in the billing policies, where because as the billing policies read or read before they were modified, based on your intent, yes, you can just change the from the payable due and payable 30 days from following the billing date, change that 30 to a 15, and the rest of the sentence fits your fits what you're looking for. At the previous billing policies considered any payment after the 15th day a late payment, and that's what the 10% was charged on, was anything after the 15th day.
Then I'm okay that if we moved it to the 15 days and then left everything mm-hmm. after that, and then they didn't get charged that penalty until after they became delinquent.
Mm-hmm. Okay, mm-hmm. So we're right now, the suggestion is that we change the first 30 listed in section 9 of the billing policies, that we change the first 30 to 15 and then leave the rest of the paragraph alone.
Yes.
Okay.
And so pretty much, from what I'm understanding, our decision here so far is that it's going to be like a 15-day grace period.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So it will read, for the public's benefit, water sewer bills are due and payable 15 days following the billing date. After 30 days, unpaid water sewer bills become delinquent, and a 5% penalty may be added to all delinquent water sewer billings. That's how it would read. Mm-hmm. Mr. Michelson.
Is that consistent with the way the ordinance reads right now?
It is. Mm-hmm.
So we wouldn't have to go around and change it in public hearings? And all.
Correct.
Okay.
Yes.
All right.
The other change we changed in delinquent accounts section 10, you'll notice the highlight there, which it said that the delinquency will be mailed to each and every delinquent water and sewer service account holder by the fifth. It used to say the fifth day of the month. We said the fifth business day of the month, so that if it fell on a Saturday or Sunday, we weren't contradicting our own policy. So, and that is also consistent with our ordinance. So I'd entertain a motion to make the modifications as they've been discussed.
You made the motion. You'll have to amend it.
Amend the motion?
Yeah.
Or you can resend it and we can breathe.
Yeah, let's do it that way.
I'd entertain, to help you, so that all you'll have to say is so moved, if you so choose, is I'd entertain a motion that amends the original motion stating that the water bills are due payable 15 days following the billing date. Mr. Michelson?
I'd like to amend my motions to go to the 15-day instead of the 30-day.
Okay. And the record understands the intent also of our decision. So if there's any question of the language of our motions, the record knows what we're after here. Is there a second to Mr. Michelson's amendment?
Second.
All right. It's been moved by Mr. Michelson, seconded by Ms. Devlin to state water sewer bills are due and payable 15 days following the billing date. Council discussion on the amendment. Public comment on the amendment. Call for the vote. Councilmember Holcomb.
Aye.
Councilmember Devlin.
Aye.
Councilmember Bick.
Aye.
Councilmember Michelson.
Aye.
All right, the motion states that we are adopting Resolution 457A, amending utility billing policies and procedures, and bills are due payable 15 days following the billing date. Further council discussion? Public comment? Are you with us, Chief?
I understand what you guys just did. You're giving me 30 days in which to pay my water sewer bill with no penalty. Doesn't that mess up your cash flow in the offices as bills come in? Rather than getting checks coming in 15 days after they've been billed, I'm gonna wait 30 days. Why not? Screws up your guys' cash flow in the office by half a month.
Ms. Holcomb.
If you, before all this, we never got charged a penalty, even if you paid it the last day of the month. I know I never did after the 15 days, and I was told that in the office that there was no late penalty, so I don't think it would screw up anything.
The billing system does adequately track our receivables, and we do prudently keep enough in reserves to sustain cash flow in each of the enterprise funds. So it is something, in fact, I think, We have about half of our folks, we see two big rushes, well, three. We see a big rush at the first of the month as soon as we send the bills out. In fact, if they're not out by the third, people are knocking on the door wondering where their bill is and think that they've missed the mail. And then we get the rush at the 14th and 15th and 16th, and then we get a rush on the last day of the month of folks who are trying to meet that last deadline. So, and then for the most part, everybody's paid up within at least... For the most part, they've got something in, and we're still working on those delinquent accounts, so which we continue to reduce. Any further public comment or council discussion? All right, I'll call for the vote. Councilmember Vick.
Aye.
Councilmember Michelson.
Aye.
Councilmember Holcomb.
Aye.
Councilmember Devlin.
Aye.
All right, so motion passes. Those amendments. Next item is discussion decision on scheduled town hall closures on the fifth Friday of the month for staff and council training. Council communication outlines the process there that we've undertaken so far. Councilmember Vick and Councilmember Devlin both attended the January 31st joint session, and so I asked that they... they're willing to provide their feedback. We did poll, and I apologize, I meant to have those results available for you tonight. I didn't pull that together formally, but we did poll the attendees and received largely positive responses, especially from staff. So this is an opportunity to make the fifth Friday closure more permanent or not, or to discuss the concept. From there, I'll defer to council. Ms. Devlin?
For me, being able to participate in that felt like we were actually giving our town a gift. We were all able to come together, not get to know each other, but actually see the hearts of the department, why they're actually asking for this amount of money, what it means to them, rather than just sitting in front of a piece of paper, hearing them talk for a few seconds and making a decision on something that really affects a department. That had impact on me. Speaking with the staff, getting to know the staff, understanding expectations on both parties, just coming together for the common good of an organization working together. It was a very powerful time. I left, I was here for 3.5-4 hours, and I left here feeling vibrant. I left here feeling extremely proud to be on the town council and to be part of administration, or, you know, the whole organization coming together. It was a very powerful time. It did exceed my expectations. I think we have only positive to gain by continuing to do that.
Mr. Michelson.
I wasn't here, of course, because I had to go out of town in Seattle. But is there a way that we could work it, that we could keep town hall open and have maybe part of partial staff doing it? Or are you in favor of just closing it completely down?
I'm in favor of closing the office. I don't like the aspect of the diminished customer service. And that's something that's kind of hard to stomach, if you will. Largely on a Friday afternoon, we, especially at the very end of the month like that, you know, we didn't see a whole lot. We had the front door open all day, so that we could hear people, you know, come in, and the building was accessible, but we didn't see a lot of traffic come in. In fact, we saw a couple of citizens come in during our lunch break, which we helped them when they came in. They were looking for dog licenses, and we helped them with that. Otherwise, the only other two citizens that came through the door were here for the actual workshop. And so I think if it's something that people are aware of and are used to, then customers kind of adapt their schedules to that. You know, it's something, yes, we could keep the office open. That just means that one staff member isn't going to be able to participate in the discussion that happens, you know, with the rest of the group. And I think all of the staff members in the front office are critical to the success of the council and of the organization. They all pull some of that weight in their own way. And so as a member of the executive staff, it is pretty important to me that they are in attendance of those sessions. So yes, there are absolutely pros and cons of having that office closed. But I think citizens have more to gain by allowing our staff to interact with the town council on that kind of a setting than they have to lose. Ms. Holcomb.
Well, does it have to be a full day? Could it just be like half of a day instead of a full?
It entirely depends. I guess that's the challenge. You can approve closing the office on the fifth Friday, and we can modify that, you know, going forward. I mean, it kind of depends on what we have scheduled that day, and, you know, what I'd like to see, because this one was this training on the 31st was done, put together in relatively short notice. You know, we brought the concept forward on the 9th, and then we had, you know, about 3 weeks to prepare for it. Whereas, you know, now that we have months to prepare for it, I'd like to see a facilitator come in so that I don't have to facilitate so much of the conversation, and I can participate myself and provide, you know, my insight that way versus facilitating discussion. That was one weak side of this specific training. It depends on what we decide the agenda is, because there may be an agenda on, you know, one of the four Fridays a year where it isn't necessary to have all of the executive staff in that session, and that maybe it's just a session for the town council. But I do appreciate the council's consideration of having the latitude to make that decision based on that agenda, rather than having to come to a meeting every single time. It's just inconsistent. Would be the challenge, but yes, I mean, anything's. But we can do anything we want, right? I mean, depends on what the prerogative of the council is. But my recommendation is that the executive staff in the office be allowed to participate throughout the day, depending on what the session is. So, Mr. Michelson.
I would have to agree with Councilmember Holcomb. I think it would better serve the public and the administration and the council as far as training if we close it just for part of the day and left it open for training purposes of that. And at your qualm or at your thing, you could pick morning. Maybe if it's 2 or 3 hours or something, I guess I wouldn't know how to set the time limit. We leave that up to you.
Okay.
That's okay.
My issue with that, I mean, we could do half day, full day, quarter day. It doesn't matter to me, but whenever we break down to the whole thing, it's better, it'd honestly be more beneficial to go the full day simply because I'm going to use Monica as an example. Being the town clerk, she has to go through certain trainings and whatnot. If we only do half a day and it's requested for the whole council to be here for this training, we're going to end up sitting through her training that she's receiving, that out of everybody in the room, she's the only person that really needs it, and that it would benefit.
Ms. Devlin?
I have a hard time. I appreciate a half day, and I think it could work, but after being here and experiencing what we went through, so the staff had their trainings and their time in the morning. We came in the afternoon. We got to have a round table, and we got debriefed on what they experienced in the morning, what they learned, and then we got to talk to all the department heads and hear about them, as well as kind of our viewpoints. If we split that up, I don't think time would allow for the necessity of what happened that day to happen.
And the other aspect, Ms. Devlin isn't alone in the feeling that she left here on that Friday, where there was a lot of energy and excitement and optimism from the interactions that day. I think everyone left the building proud to be a member of the organization, and I think that was especially true for the executive staff who were able to participate in the afternoon session. And it would be unfortunate, you know, it is what it is if that's the direction we're given, but it would be unfortunate for a single staff member who needs to watch the office to be left out of that opportunity, because I think it would greatly benefit their morale and their job and that they do feel like they're a member of the organization rather than the person who's selected just to watch the office while the rest of us strategize. So, and I acknowledge that each training or each session or each day that we do this would be different. It's not going to be the same as what we did on the 31st. You know, it would be nice to have the variety, but we do need to know how to plan that if that's the case.
And I do want to just kind of make sure that this happened, because it was my understanding that this happened. So in the morning sessions, if there was some, say, I'll just use Robert as an example of this. If he had work that he just needed to catch up on with minimal interruption, he was able to do that.
Sure, and in fact,
people walking in and out.
Yeah, he missed a portion. He's a good example, actually, because he did miss a portion he was late to the afternoon session and then worked through lunch. There was an individual who came and worked with him on some water rate study stuff. That was happened to be in the area the same day, and she had met him at another class he attended in the state, and so he was able to schedule a new meeting with her, and you know the interruption exactly was limited. He didn't have to worry about answering his phone or anything like that. They worked for a good hour and a half on strategizing moving forward on a water rights conversation with the town council. So yes, to speak to that. I speak to the affirmative. Both Chief Motley and George were in attendance as well, and it sounds like maybe the Chief wants to share some thoughts.
Yeah, I'd love to. As you're one of your volunteer department heads, I took the whole day off in order to attend that, and I felt that it was a very beneficial meeting. However, what we did is we had a meeting in the morning with staff, and then we met in the afternoon with the council, and basically it was a rerun with additional information in the afternoon. Whereas if we were able to have all the participants that are able to attend for the full day, we would not have that repeat time frame put back out there, we can accomplish more things and dig deeper into agended items and make it a much more beneficial time. I mean, it's a full day, great, lovely, leave work, do that volunteer gig for a full day. It's huge. It's a huge benefit to be able to talk to Monica, to be able to talk to Robert, to be able to talk to the mayor, be able to talk to all the different people that interact and play in the daily operations of the organization. I mean, I can talk with Monica about, well, how do we need to do this personnel thing, and how does that relate to the finance department? How do these things all interact when everybody's in the same room at the same table at the same time? It's a huge benefit for me to be able to take a day, once a quarter, sit down, get the broad overview of what everybody else is doing versus my own little narrow view of what's happening. I think it's hugely beneficial for everybody to have that ability to sit down and discuss. And we're not making motions and seconding, and it's just discussion. And yeah, we did open it up and we did let public come in and see what was going on in the afternoon and then, you know, be aware of what was happening. So it's not like we're trying to do this behind closed doors by any stretch of the imagination. So I think it's a huge benefit for the town and the city.
Given that, I'll make a motion to close Town Hall on 5th Friday, which is pretty much going to be quarterly every year.
I second.
Okay, it's been moved by Mr. Vick, seconded by Ms. Devlin, to close Town Hall on the 5th Friday of the month's having one as an administrative day for council and staff. Further council discussion? Public comment. Ms. Barker.
So I understand coming together. Again, I preached this at the last one, was closing Town Hall when it's not a government holiday. We have government holidays for this, for closures. We're paying staff to be here. Some cannot take that time off. So it's Robin taking that extra time off for her, out of her day. Sometimes it's tough for those people. So you're excluding some people that don't have the money or the time. Town Hall should be open. We're here. We pay as taxpayers. We pay for you guys to be here to work for us. And I would expect that.
Further public comment.
I understand your point. I think that if by doing this, that one day for those that are able to make it, I get it. We have meetings, we have other things, we have disasters, whatever happens and we can't make it. But the ability to do that, I think, only makes our organization better, that we can provide better service than back out to the community by having these meetings. Therefore, when our doors are open for business, we're given the best business that we can. I mean, we can meet our customers, our citizens' needs and demands at a much better, more efficient rate. And I really believe that 4 days out of the year isn't a huge burden on the citizenry.
Okay, any further public comment or council discussion? All right, hearing none, I'll call for the vote. Councilmember Holcomb?
No.
Councilmember Michelson?
No.
Councilmember Vick?
Aye.
Councilmember Devlin?
Aye.
It's no secret, I support the program. I'll vote in favor. All right, we'll move on to new business now. Discussion decision. Resolution 468, declaring intent to annex a tract of land located in Section 35, Township 9 North, Range 20 West, 26.06 acres. Certificate survey number 69110-R, Tract 1B. This is the 26 acres adjacent to the town's well field. Originally, the town had a right of first refusal on it, we passed that right of first refusal and allowed Mr. Jesse Reeves to purchase the property. and thereby, at that time, he expressed that he intended to annex the property. This resolution of intent initiates the process where we'll do public noticing and put together the provision the provision of services for the property for council's consideration at another meeting. In addition, because this annexation is a bit unique for the town, given that we do have an interest on that property, at the meeting you consider the annexation, a contract will be brought forth to the council, which will contract Mr. Reeves and the town of Stevensville, where the town will provide annexation so long as Mr. Reeves provides the town an easement, which has not been yet determined, and we don't have the ability yet to determine that. It's a unique situation. So he will promise us an easement, we will promise him annexation, and that document won't murky up the annexation itself. So you'll see, by passing this resolution of intent, you are basically having the administration move forward. We'll schedule the two public notices in the paper and do our usual land use notices. We will put together the plan for services and hold a public hearing. After that public hearing, you will have a contract before you on the agenda, and then you'll have the final annexation before you on the agenda. So this by no means annexes the property. It just gives everybody the warning shot that it's coming. And so staff has done a review and has made their comments known to the administration, which will be incorporated into the plan for services, and is addressed also through the contract. Mr. Michelson.
I make a motion to approve resolution number 468, declaring intent to annex a tract of land located in section 35, township 9 north, range 20 west, 26.06 acres, CS 9691110-R, tract 1B.
Second.
All right, it's been moved by Mr. Michelson, seconded by Mr. Vick, to adopt resolution 468 as the record reflects. Discussion. Mr. Michelson?
I had a discussion with our city attorney, Scott, over there this morning, and I think moving forward, we should add, and for our discussion at your office earlier today, Brandon, we should add language to the effect that at our planning and zoning meeting, and I discussed this with Mr. Kellogg today, that it should be added that we need access to those ponds, and we also need access to, in the future, like if we need to not drill a bit crazy drilling wells, of course, but if we need to drill a well or something earlier or later on, then that we should have access to that.
And
I think that has to be in some type of a form of contract or something or whatever.
Correct.
Like that.
That's the contract I just mentioned that will be on the agenda with the annexation.
Okay.
That contract will solidify those details.
And then George had some language in there too that he wanted.
Correct, and that'll be discussed in the contract and the plan for services.
Okay. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Any further discussion from council on the resolution and annexation? Planning and zoning has reviewed it and has recommended annexation, so they have seen this, and so it's on the council's docket. Public comment on the resolution. All right, hearing none, I'll call for the vote. Councilmember Vick.
Aye.
Councilmember Devlin.
Aye.
Councilmember Holcomb.
Aye.
Councilmember Michelson.
Aye.
All right. Resolution passes. We'll go to resolution 469, adopting a master fee schedule for charges and fees.
We'll take a 10-minute recess.
Sure. Is 10 too long, or can we do 5?
5.
All right, let's reconvene at 8:30.
Until you did that, I knew it.
All right, we'll reconvene the town council meeting February 13th, 2020, after a short recess. We're on new business item B, discussion decision on resolution 469, adopting a master schedule for charges and fees. The previous council had this fee schedule included in the budget document that was approved in December. The town council individually requested, or members of the council expressed concern of that process. It was different than the process that the town of Stevensville specifically uses normally to adopt charges and fees. So to kind of help ease those concerns and to initiate the process as we would more normally adopt fees, we brought a resolution forward that adopts a master fee schedule. Council should keep in mind that the fees on the schedule as they are now are incorporated into the revenue budget. And so the intent here is to really just solidify the adoption of fees rather than to make any drastic modification to fees, since your revenue budget relies on those fees. And we don't necessarily want to undertake a new budget process because revenue has been changed, because that obviously affects our expenditures. The council was provided with a schedule of the fees that specifically changed. There's a short schedule that was emailed out and is included on the screen for your review. And it reflects the old charge and the new charge. Those who were here when the fees were originally discussed will recall that the administration took the approach of increasing fees to pay for services rather than increasing a mill levy or increasing taxes citywide. So we noticed that there were some fees that were not necessarily covering the costs of the services that were being provided. There are also some fees on the, where you'll notice there are some new fees that are in this schedule. The purpose tonight is to just simply adopt those fees. Those fees, for example, the yard waste dump is one of those. The alarm system and false alarm fees are those as well. Those fees have not been authorized by municipal ordinance yet. Those ordinances are being drafted and will be brought forward to the council so that we're authorized to charge those fees. But currently we're not charging them, nor are we soliciting them. So the ins and outs of those programs will be discussed when those ordinances come forward, because I know that there's some feedback on those items and those programs. When those ordinances come forward, then we can discuss the specifics of the fee or the program itself. But for now, we're just instituting the fee so that when that ordinance comes forward and it refers back to a resolution authorized by town council, then that's already in place.
So if I understand what you're saying is correct, if we adopt this resolution tonight, you'll come back to us with ordinances to adopt for the new fees?
Correct. For the new fee programs, like I said, like some fees are already for a bonfire permit, for example. We don't receive many of those, but we do receive some. There's some staff time involved in processing those fees, albeit limited. And so we've charged a reasonable amount for that permit, and it's authorized by ordinance to do so. So that's not necessarily one where we would bring a new ordinance forward on a bonfire permit, because that's addressed. However, the yard waste dump is one of those where it's not authorized by municipal ordinance, and so an ordinance needs to be brought forward to the council outlining the rules and different things of that program specifically. And so yes, that fee is being adopted here, but the actual program isn't authorized by council yet. And so that's something that would come back.
So I guess my next question would be, because I know our fees did end up increasing under the assumption that it was approved because it was in the preliminary budget. Mm-hmm. So then why weren't we informed that we were going to have separate ordinances for new fees?
You were.
Okay.
Yeah, for like the programs I've mentioned, we explained that those programs would be forthcoming under ordinance.
Okay.
Mr. Michelson.
So we're basically just going to approve the fees that are up there tonight, Mayor Dewey, and the ones that say none on them, they're going to come back up to council again, as you said, through resolution and ordinance approval?
Not entirely, no.
So which
for example, the paid excavation fee for streets and the unpaid excavation fee in streets are already authorized by a municipal code. They were just never established.
Okay.
So some of these, namely the alarm systems and yard waste, are going to come back to council as an ordinance, as separate ordinances, as we are able to build those. So they're in process.
Okay.
Ms. Holcomb.
I just have a question about the yard waste.
Mm-hmm.
Who's going to regulate that?
That's what we'll address in the ordinance.
Okay.
Yeah, those are the details we need to work out through that process. Mr. Michelson?
And could you, we discussed it earlier this afternoon in your office, could you clarify to Stacey out there about the plug-in?
Sure. In terms of farmers market, we consider that, and have always, the precedent's been set that the farmers market over the summer months is considered a single event. And so they don't fill out an event application for every single weekend that they're open. They fill out one, it's approved, and it's done. So in this case, if they choose to use the power, then they'll pay a $30 fee for the year. In addition to their $50 fee for the entire event, rather than $30 every weekend and $50 every weekend, they'll pay this one fee. Yeah.
Okay.
Ms. Barker?
So I just want to clarify, I paid $30 for the use of power
for the whole year, because so, you're considered one event.
Okay, so mine goes from May to October. So
yeah.
I'm being charged, and then again in May I'll be charged another $30.
Correct.
For all the use and for 6 months worth of power.
Correct, because it's one event.
Which the power is actually cheaper than that.
And we have.
Because.
Yeah.
Okay. And then I pay the $50. So I'm paying $80 for one.
For the farmer's market for a year. Well, for the summer, for the 6 month summer, correct. Yeah. Running the charges for example, the Creamery Picnic, they're going to pay upwards of, over $100 in fees because there's a significant impact of that event on our. Yes, so for an event, one event may not use $30 worth of power, and another event may use over $30 worth of power, but we hope that it averages over a year's time and that there is some money gained in that where we can maintain the infrastructure, where we can make more power available to different events or different areas of town where we identified it would be helpful to have additional power for the array of things we do. And one example of that is on West 3rd Street, we have a number of events that occur. Namely, farmers market. We've heard that it would be helpful to have power on the west end of 3rd Street as well as where the power currently exists on Main Street. Through an accumulation, we should be able to install that infrastructure over time and maintain it as it needs replaced. So that's part of the rationale as well, is when the 3rd Street power box needs to be replaced at some point, we now have the ability to do so. We have some funding to help offset those costs. And the rationale behind special events and really all of these fees was to say we didn't want Mrs. Smith on Mission Street to have to pay more in taxes because there's an event in town, but rather that event should help sustain the impacts to the organization. That was the rationale. Mr. Michaels?
Can you make a motion to start this?
Yeah, I mean, we've obviously discussed it, and so I'd entertain a motion from council to adopt Resolution 469, adopting the master schedule for charges and fees.
I'll make a motion.
Okay, it's been so moved. Is there a second?
No second.
Okay, it's been moved by Ms. Devlin, seconded by Mr. Vick to approve Resolution 469, adopting master schedule for charges and fees. It is the administration's intent to revisit this master schedule on an annual basis as part of the budget process, rather than letting fees go several years without being addressed and then all of a sudden having an impact on folks where we're having to do some catch up. We'd rather just look at them every year. If they need to be changed, great. If they don't, we'll leave them alone. But every year we know where the master fee schedule. We found it's quite cumbersome in the office when someone's like, oh, I want to, it's hard. I mean, dog licenses are in one resolution and business licenses are in another resolution and special event permits and even records requests they're all in different places in the book. And so this helped us put a master schedule together that comprehensively puts all fees in one place. So. Further council discussion? Mr. Michelson?
I have a question for Councilmember Jamie. You being a Main Street business, have you heard any feedback, pro or con, as far as the fees being raised 100%?
I have not heard anything. Nothing. Not one word.
Okay.
Yeah, so. I mean, I'm pretty active out there, so.
Monica, in your processing of business licenses, what feedback have you heard?
I've processed about one third of the business licenses, and I've heard one gentleman just reiterate the fact that it's been raised, and I clarified yes. And he paid it.
Thank you.
I have a question, and it really, any of these business things that are, any of our business licenses that are increasing, being a junk dealer or whatever, how much of that is going to go back into economic development?
Currently, all those fees go back into the general fund.
Okay.
And don't necessarily go straight back into the economic development fund. That being said, there are some general fund activities that do support economic development, albeit not directly. That was some of the insight into the fee increase, was to say there's a way not only to help offset the cost of compiling this data, but that we can provide more material and stuff to the businesses in order to, with the education and that sort of thing, to help support the businesses in any way we can. So.
And the reason why I bring that up is I think that if we're increasing their fee by 100%,
sure, they should benefit.
They should benefit from it. I mean, you know, help. We can help them by doing some sort of advertisement for farmers market and whoever.
One of those ventures is, the town is now maintaining the tourism website that was abandoned by Main Street. So we're taking that on because we didn't want that to go away. Maintaining the phone line that has been published as basically the information line for Stevensville for over 20 years. So we have that now here. And so it's offsetting some of those costs as well. And then just recently we did a quick pamphlet to help educate business owners, especially downtown, on things like encroachments and snow removal and signage and those types of things to help kind of spread the word in a friendly way. And so the cost of that is also offset through these fees. So the only fee related to business, to the business license is the general business license fee that's increased. The junk users and the alcohol licenses and gambling and those types of things have not changed.
And the other feature that I just want to make a statement about that it was brought up to me, and from what I understand, it was also brought up to Mr. Michelson, and that's the organized league fee of increasing that to $3 a player. I've heard from a couple of our league people that they're really not in favor for that and are willing to move their leagues to other communities.
Mr. Michelson?
I had a phone call from Kathy Cook. She wasn't happy with the increase of the soccer fee to each player, and she wanted me to pass this on to you that if we approve the $3 instead of the $2.50, then her soccer players won't be coming to the field.
Okay.
That's what she said. So I think we should keep that at $2.50 for the sake of the children.
Sure. Any other council discussion on that specifically? It's been some time since that fee has been adjusted, and there is obviously we'll maintain the parks regardless, but there is impact to the parks by having that activity down there, and so our hope was to offset some of that, but to also be more. I think that there are a number of organized league activities that are occurring in our parks that we're not aware of, and so our hope was to be a bit more diligent in being aware of those and making sure that everyone who uses the park pays a share of that facility. So that's also the intent of the administration. Mr. Michael.
So are we all in agreement then to keep it at $2.50 instead of raising it to $3?
I have not heard a motion.
Oh.
Yeah, we have a motion on the table to adopt the whole thing. We'd have to do something to.
I think to piggyback off what you said, I think we can make 50 cents up somewhere else besides on kids.
I'd entertain a motion then to amend the original motion to retain the $2.50. Per player fee and on organized and association field use.
So moved.
Okay, it's been moved by Ms. Holcomb, seconded by Mr. Michelson. Is there any other discussion on the amendment from council? Public comment? Mr. Thomas.
Well, on the title of the whole thing, we do have horses and we do have llamas. You don't have a fee.
Mm-hmm. We'll keep that in mind. Right now, we're just speaking to whether or not we're going to keep the fee at $2.50. For kiddos on the field, or if it's going to be raised to $3. Further public comment, Ms. Barker.
On the park fees that you had on there for Pavilion, who's going to monitor that? I mean, we've got people that come down there in the summer with birthday parties, and I mean, it's used a lot.
We'll address that as soon as the amendment passes.
That's, I guess, my concern too, is I understand, but again, as taxpayers, we pay for that park.
Sure. All right, so the amendment is to retain the $2.50 per player fee rather than increasing it to $3. Any public comment on that amendment specifically?
Mm-hmm. Yes. Okay. To $11. I would definitely like to see it stay at $2.50 because some children can't afford to go, even though it's just a minimum of 50 cents. Some kids can't do that extra 50 cents, and I just as soon see the kids in activities doing something healthy rather than being poor and finding themselves doing things in a slum type situation. So, thank you. If you do take the $2.50, that would be great.
Any further public comment? Or discussion from council? All right, a call for the vote. The amendment is to retain the $2.50 per player charge. Mr. Vick.
Aye.
Councilmember Devlin.
Aye.
Councilmember Holcomb.
Aye.
And Councilmember Michelson.
Aye.
All right, the amendment passes. The motion on the floor is to approve Resolution 469 with the exception of retaining a $2.50 charge for organized league and association field use. To speak to a couple of questions that were raised, the pavilion rental will only be charged if someone calls the office and asks for exclusive use of the pavilion, which happens on occasion. Otherwise, our standard answer to those folks who call and ask to rent a pavilion is it's first come, first serve, and there's no charge. So if you get down there and you reserve it, fine. But if you want our staff to go put a sign on the pavilion that says reserved for Stacy's birthday party, then we're going to charge you to do so. And we've given residents who do pay taxes a break on that charge and charge non-residents who aren't paying taxes to maintain our parks, we're charging them more. So that hopefully addresses that question. In terms of llamas and the other horses, we've never discussed charging for those and permitting for them. We don't have many people call and ask to permit their llamas, and I only know of, like, is there one or two llamas in town?
Two.
And I didn't know of them until
about
the beginning of January. I was at a lunch meeting, and the chief called and said, there's a dog chasing a llama, and I'm going to shoot the dog if it doesn't stop chasing the llama. And my response was, well, wait, where did the llama come from? Why is there llamas in town? And I just wasn't aware we had llamas living here. So
actually, I called them.
Okay.
Because they were actually not even in the spot where they are now. They were, like, hidden behind the building in a very small spot. Mm.
Well, the individual I was having lunch with at the time thought it was quite interesting, my side of the conversation, that there was llamas and why are you shooting the dog? So at any rate, we haven't addressed fees for those. I would think that if council wants to explore that, that we could address that in the coming budget cycle and put something into place for permitting those folks. I'm not sure. I know our ordinance is specific on permitting the animals that are on the list. I don't know if it requires them to permit horses and llamas or any other livestock for that matter. So we'll do some homework into that and find out how it exactly reads and if a fee is authorized, and if not, if the council wants to undertake that. Good point, George. I know it limits you a cow and a half and a horse and a half per acre, right? So if you can find a half a horse someplace, you can keep it on your half an acre. Ms. Parker.
This is just a silly question, too. Our neighborhood is full of cats, and it's becoming an increasingly big issue. Mm-hmm. Obviously, we have to, for our dogs, we have to have them tagged. Why aren't these cats being tagged? Mm-hmm. Why aren't they being told as owners, too? You know, we have to keep our dogs in an enclosed area. I'm sorry, but it's getting out of hand.
And, you know, as a cat lover, I mean, but okay. when I'm cleaning up someone else's cat's mess in my yard.
And it stinks.
Or there's scratching on your windows.
And I hear they're hard to herd. So, in that respect, we can address animal control on another agenda item so that you can be more broad, because I've also heard feedback that the recension of the dog limit in town has also given us negative results. So, we have plenty of feedback from the police department to share on animal control that we can place on a committee meeting agenda that you guys can discuss at length. But for the purposes of tonight's discussion, we're just looking at fees that are been proposed in the master schedule. Further discussion on the fees, Ms. Motley?
Yes, I do. Could you go back to that other page?
Sure.
Vicki Motley, 318 9th Street. I guess I have a couple questions. Why is the town in the porta potty business, where you're offering rental for $60 per month or per event? To me, that should not be something the city's doing. That should be under that event to get their own stuff. I also have a problem with alarm system permits fees to charge people. They're already paying a public service fee in their taxes, and I think to double up and do that, I think is wrong. There's a lot of people. I mean, how are you going to determine if they have a security system or alarm system? You're not going to know unless it goes off. Frankly, I guess I don't think it's any of your business if I have an alarm system. I mean. And then I look at the medical alarms. Are you going to tax them too? It's just one more tax. And the elderly, number one, can't afford to have any more taxes on medical alerts or whatever. False alarm fees. I mean, stuff happens. I mean, permits, fire alarms go off. Yes, I agree some get a little excessive, but I mean, they pay a fee, so I don't agree with the alarm system fees, and I think it's crazy that you have a porta potty fee and you're getting into the rental business. I think that's not a good use of town time.
The porter potty fee was more or less actually a creative venture by the former finance officer, where we have a porter potty available. We don't use it routinely, but we have one in storage. And so when events occur that, for example, if an event occurred at Lewis and Clark Park during the winter months where our bathrooms are closed, we can provide a fee. We can provide a porta potty with a little bit of an upcharge as a source of revenue. And the only thing it requires the town to do is move it. Otherwise, we contract someone to pump it. It's never been used. No one's taken it up. They typically take the approach of getting their own porta potty, which is fine. But we thought, well, if somebody asked and needed it in a pinch, we could provide that service. So that was something with special events that was combined. And the alarm system permits, they're not uncommon for many communities. It helps to have a repository of where those systems are and how they're maintained, if they're maintained. And it's not been determined as to what types of systems necessarily would be permitted. So that's something that would be outlined in an ordinance. Mr. Michelson.
I have kind of an issue with the yard waste dump fees. I think we could be potentially opening up ourselves to a can of worms. For one, somebody's going to have to man that or not. And like you said earlier today, it is an honor system. And I think town residents are probably good, but if you start charging people like commercial.
So, Mr. Michelson, it's okay to adopt the fee tonight, and then when we bring the the ordinance forward, if you don't pass the ordinance, we're going to take it off.
It dies. Okay.
Yeah.
So that's what I thought would be.
We put it on here because we wanted to do the fees all at once,
okay,
rather than having another resolution for fees and da-da-da-da-da-da for garbage fees and all that other stuff.
All right.
So I anticipate when a resolution, or excuse me, an ordinance, when an ordinance comes forward for alarm systems and yard waste, that those things are going to be discussed at length, it sounds like. So for tonight's purposes, we're just looking at adopting this fee schedule. We are by no means tomorrow morning going to start issuing dump permits or alarm fees. Mr. Motley.
Can you explain the rationale for false alarm fees?
So false alarm fees, we've seen implemented elsewhere as well, where repeated false alarms place an unreasonable burden on the responders or on the systems that have to respond to them. And that's not necessarily isolated to the fire department, but also includes the police department. Many of us are unaware of how many burglar alarms our police department responds to on a regular basis, because perhaps it's a silent alarm and an individual consistently forgets to put the balloon away overnight or something like that. And so those over a period of time, or they don't maintain their system and it continues to activate, those over time take attention away from the other pieces of an agency's job. And so if they're abusing that system, they should compensate for it.
And how do we track that and also bill for those fees? Two, is that response not part of what the community-based taxes for us to do?
Those would be addressed in the ordinance that adopts the program.
I get what you're doing, and I understand. I'm not in favor of that from the fire side of life. If law enforcement saw that, they can have it. Medical response, false alarms, fire response, false alarms. I want them to call if they think we need to call, or if it automatically goes off and we come. I think that prevention side of that is well worth it versus dinging them $50. I mean, if we're going to ding, the school owes us for a bunch of calls.
I don't disagree with that.
And if I'm understanding this correctly, and I had to turn my mic off because it was the one that was feeding back, that false alarm fee is only for an automated alarm, correct?
Correct. Yeah, I mean, if you burn your chicken, right? We're not going to charge you for your false alarm fee, obviously. I mean, that's a true alarm. But an automated system that continually goes off because it's not being maintained or because of some sort of negligence on the occupant's you know, part, that's where this comes into play. And what alarms and is, I mean, especially like medical fall alarms, that's not the intent, is to permit every single person's life alarm. But you know, where we have automated systems and banks and grocery stores and schools and those areas where you know, they're creating extra responses that aren't necessary. Yes, you do pay a tax for an emergency response to a degree. If your system, because you're not taking care of your system for whatever reason, is placing undue burden on the agency, then we want to incentivize you to maintain that correctly. So, but again, those will all, I'm sure we'll have the same conversation at length when those ordinances come forward.
Then I'll wait for that.
Okay, and perhaps you can share with you're welcome to share feedback with me in the interim, so that it can be incorporated into, right? Because we'll take a lot of this conversation and put it in the ordinance.
And I'll discuss with you separately too what I'd like to see in the ordinance.
Wonderful. Is there any discussion then on the fees as they stand?
I have one question. Is the cemetery fees going to come up later, or is this it for now?
This is it for now, but Laura's looking at those, and I think in the 2021 budget, new things are coming.
Because I'd like to see a weekend fee.
Yeah. Oh, that's what she's looking at, is adopting a weekday and an overtime fee.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So there's an extensive list we found of possible charges that we didn't know existed, which are reasonable. So.
Are you saying it's getting more expensive to die?
It is getting very expensive to die. Yes.
Yeah. I can take care of you.
Yeah, there. And on that note, for what it's worth, that we've noticed we're pretty much out of room in the cemetery, and so we're growing. We're not double stacking, but we are plotting additional land for graves.
It nonetheless, is bad when we're discussing supply and demand over cemetery plots.
They're dying to see us. So, with that, if there's no further public comment or council comment, call for the vote. Councilmember Holcomb.
Aye.
Councilmember Devlin.
Aye.
Councilmember Michelson.
Aye.
Councilmember Vick.
Aye.
All right. That concludes the business portion of the agenda. Keep my executive report brief, although we haven't really been here that long in most respects. And the executive report, as usual, is available. In fact, it's available ahead of time today on my webpage on the website. Just to give you an update on a few things, I'll run through this quickly. The 2020 Water System Preliminary Engineering Report update, we've released an RFQ on that, which will be advertised until March 13th. When those qualifications are due back from engineers on updating the preliminary engineering report that was done in 2009, so that we can, at a later date, proceed with the water storage system improvements that have been scheduled as part of phase four. So that project's underway in terms of engineering. Council obviously received a number of updates from my office on the wind event on February 1st. Obviously the departments who came out and helped that Saturday should be commended for their performance. They did a great job, and their willingness to help on short notice, and sometimes in precarious situations where they weren't able necessarily to easily access the community because of road blockages. They still got here and got the job done, which I appreciate. So, debris pickup in the priority areas where there was a big mess or there was a lot of debris, we picked all that stuff up within the week and a half, 2 weeks following the event. Any remaining debris, we've decided we'll just wait till spring pickup to do that. So if folks have debris on their private property that they need to dispose of from the storm, we'll come pick that up at the curb in our usual curbside spring pickup. It just wasn't feasible for us to do that before then, specifically because we only have one dump truck to haul debris instead of two, unless we take the sander off, which the weather's not been cooperative in that regard. So that's kind of covers the wind event. As far as damage, we obviously saw some damage on our flagpole, so we're starting the process to replace that. We still got to get up on the roof and fix that antenna, and some shingles came off some pavilions in the park. Otherwise, we fared pretty well as far as damage goes. to our facilities, so minimal cost there. The application the council approved some time ago now for the $10,000 to the Montana Main Street program with the Department of Commerce has been accepted and approved and awarded. So we have $10,000 coming our way to complete strategic planning for the Stevensville Main Street Association to strengthen the downtown commercial district and hopefully improve some vitality in downtown area. So we'll look to see what that exactly entails as far as strategic planning and facilitation. But the application outlines that process. Just give you a quick rundown of the projects on the docket for the mayor's office to give you kind of a sense of how much is on our plate within the administration and all of the different things happening. So you'll see that chart there. That's just a snapshot, obviously. There's a lot of other things that we're kind of doing behind the scenes as well, with like ordinance revisions and that sort of thing. Didn't obviously make the space there, but understand that when those projects show up and we have the anticipated completion date, those projects are underway, currently still. So looking down the road for you folks, you have a little calendar there, shows Town Hall is closed Monday for President's Day. Coffee with the Cop is their usual fourth Thursday at 10 o'clock here at the council chambers. And then that evening we have a council meeting, which we'll have a number of items on the agenda. Otherwise, in terms of grants, we were successful in obtaining a $300 Arbor Day grant from the DNRC, which will go towards our efforts for our spring cleanup or community cleanup day that we do on the final Saturday in April. So we'll plant a tree, as we've seen plenty of trees come down in the month of February. We'll replace some of those. So that's on the docket there. We're happy to facilitate. In the coming week, my office hours will modify. I do need to travel to Salt Lake for the funeral of my wife's grandfather. So I will be out of the office Wednesday through Friday of next week. I'll be available, obviously, through remote channels, and the office knows the drill in that regard. So, and we're closed Monday anyway. So I'll be in the office Tuesday, absent the rest of the week, and we'll catch up on the following with an extra date. So if that's it for the executive report, unless there's any questions for me. Okay. Council comments. Anything? Mr. Michelson?
I got a phone call Monday from John Anderson. He lives down there right across from Vicky's brother, Dan. He's concerned about the snow being piled up on his corner there by the trees. And he would like you, Mr. Mayor, if you could maybe go talk to Greg Chilcott about, I guess he's the culprit, piling up all the snow onto John's driveway and into his lawn. He's talked a couple times to Mr. Chilcott about it and doesn't seem to be making any headway. And he thought maybe that if you went and talked to Greg, that maybe there could be something that could be come to a resolution.
I'll tell him to take his snow and shovel it. We're happy to facilitate that conversation. I'm sure Mr. Chilcott will be amicable. Okay, any other council comments?
After reading the police report, I really wanted to commend those guys. They worked really hard this past month. Unfortunately, I get to say I got to see them a lot on Barber Street last month, but I am very proud of the work they did, and I want to thank the rest of the fire department members for especially our wind event. That was a long, long day for all of us on the fire department. And finally, I really want to commend City and County of Missoula for handling this situation that they had yesterday. Thankfully, nobody got hurt. Mm-hmm. And they did a very excellent job. And granted, they haven't found the person yet, but they did an excellent job in keeping everybody that was stuck in that area safe.
Okay. What are the council comments? Speechless on this side.
Speechless.
That's okay. Any board reports? Ms. Michelson?
We had a planning and zoning meeting a week ago, and we discussed updating our planning and growth study book. In the back of it, there was goals that they wanted the town to achieve, and the planning and zoning is going through those and checking off the ones that we have done. And we're also going through and modifying some things and bringing them forward for our next planning and growth study that's coming up in another year or so. And also, we discussed the Jesse Ramo situation that we have tentatively approved tonight.
Jesse Reeves. Hmm? Wrong Jesse. Jesse Reeves.
Oh, okay.
We don't want to bring Ramos into this.
Why not? Jesse Reeves.
He's got plenty on his plate, as you know.
Okay, that's all I have. Thank you.
No problem. Any other board reports?
Airport board met on Tuesday. We discussed a little bit more about the drain field project. The board is also getting ready to probably prepare a package for us on increasing the rental fees for the hangars, or the lot fees or the leases. And something else on my mind that happened the other night. I can't remember what it is right now. But if it was Katie Coleman, I would can remember anything else that happened at that meeting, I'd be more than happy to let her.
We discussed a new hangar construction and the drain field, new lease, a new lease, kind of changing and modifying what we have in the lease and lease rates, and the turf runway was brought up in old business.
But there, the people that are really wanting the turf runway, there wasn't anybody here for public comment for that. So we're not, right now, as far as the board sits and they quote Craig, if they really want it, they need to start showing up to the meetings and discussing it.
Sure. Okay. You've been quiet over here. Yeah. No worries. We'll get on that. All right. If there's nothing else for the good of the order, then we adjourn. Thanks, everyone.